This is Let's Get Legal. We are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, as you know. And we always have new listeners popping on. I'm not a lawyer, but I talk to experts and people that are about important topics to everyone. And we have a new friend joining us today. We got Matt Goldstein from Wallace Miller. Matt, hello. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You're a lawyer at Wallace Miller. You like working at the firm, I assume?
I am. I love it. I love it.
Anyone that ever comes in for Wallace Miller seems to have a drive to look out for the, maybe little guy is the wrong term, but the everyday person. Do you feel that same thing?
I think that's right. That's what we do at Wallace Miller.
In terms of you do it, whether it's malpractice suits or I guess it's a multi-district litigation involving pharmacy companies or products that are used improperly or surgeries that have gone wrong. You have personal injury stuff. You do something on the financial side about predatory lending, which we'll get to in a little bit, but I want to learn a little bit more about you first. So, Matt, where are you from?
I'm from Chicago originally. I grew up in Chicago's North Shore,
okay,
the north suburbs. And now I'm back in the city, living here, working here.
Did you always want to be a lawyer?
I would say yes. I don't know when exactly that all started, but I, you know, like most kids, I played sports growing up, and then I got to high school, and you know, there were extracurricular activities. We could do something outside of the 8 to 3, and that was a new thing for me. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was interested in the law, and I started a mock trial team.
What is mock trial team? We hear that term a lot. How does it work?
It's a mock trial. So it's basically a simulation of a trial. It could be a civil trial or a criminal one, but you know, it's an unbelievable experience. And actually, a handful of us are lawyers, so.
Are there a lot of mock trial teams at high schools across Illinois or no?
There are. And actually, the ISBA sponsors the state competition.
The Illinois State Bar Association.
Yeah, I'd say like 50, 60 schools. Yeah.
50, 60 schools. Mm-hmm. So you, I'm so interested in this because I did speech team and forensics and all that sort of stuff, which I was so into. Do they let you know what the trial is going to be ahead of time and you have time to prepare it and you go against, like, is there a prosecutor side and a defense side? How does that work?
Exactly. And I'm happy to do a plug for this, John.
Yeah, please. we could do an hour on this.
So yeah, you're given a case maybe like 6-7 months in advance of, you know, when the competition starts. So you prepare with your team. You write opening statements, you prepare for closing argument, you do direct and cross-examination, and you learn the federal rules of evidence. So doing that in high school is pretty cool. And then, you know, you have coaches that sponsor you who are attorneys. Our faculty sponsor was a lawyer, and then we had great just attorney coaches. It was
right. And then someone judges how you do, right?
Yep. Judges, actual judges. Lake County, DuPage County, Cook County, and they all head down to Springfield in March, and they judge all the high school teams.
I just want to, like, pause on that for a moment. Just think how valuable that is for a 14, 15, 16, or 17-year-old to essentially pretend or act or learn how to be a lawyer, and then to be judged and critiqued, you know, in a kind way, but in a, you know, they leave critiques by an actual judge. I mean, that is a formative experience that I imagine has benefited you maybe even more than you even realize, Matt.
I think that's right. And it's really not so different from being in a courtroom as a lawyer. But, you know, kind of as you're suggesting, it definitely prepares one for doing that. You get comfortable moving in these spaces, being around judges who are, of course, serious people. They're intimidating. And that's kind of how it should be. But it was great training.
Yeah. I just, a quick shout out to Downers Grove South's speech team, which I was on and did radio speaking. And yes, I went to college for broadcasting. I've had a lot of experience. But doing that as a 14-year-old, seriously, as a freshman in high school, and getting critiqued and being told sometimes when you're bad that you're bad at it, and right, Here's how you get better, I mean, these are important things. So that's just for all the kids out there, maybe the parents and the grandparents to tell their kids and grandkids about. But
do it, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Where'd you go to college then?
I went to Lake Forest College, which is also on the North Shore, and then I went to law school at the University of Illinois at Chicago, which was formerly John Marshall, but now it's UIC.
And did you know you wanted to do something like we talk about what you guys do at Wallace Miller, representing the everyday person that is often on an uphill fight against a giant?
You know, I didn't know exactly. I mean, the short answer is no. Hmm. I graduated from law school, and I got a good job right out of law school, and I started doing class action work right away. So, you know, I'm lucky.
You fell into it?
Exactly.
Which is fine. Do you, like, or do you want to ultimately, Like, is your goal like to be in trials, or do you like the work that goes into working on settlements, or is anything, wherever the case leads?
I'd say wherever the case leads. If we need to take it to trial, we will, and we're prepared to. But a lot of times these cases will settle after class certification, maybe after summary judgment. Oftentimes there's not a trial, but if there is, we'll go there and we're prepared to win.
So you've been at Wallace Miller for how long now?
About 6 months.
6 months? So you're brand new.
Yep.
You still like it, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you got to say that, of course. And I know you do genuinely, but, you know, your colleagues are listening. Okay, tell you what, this is a good time to take a break because I want to get into all things about predatory lending and all that. Hang on the line here. We got line. You're right next to me. You're not on the phone. Matt Goldstein, where you can call Wallace Miller, where I was going with that, 312-261-6193, and you can go to wallacemiller.com. More after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We're meeting Matt Goldstein from Wallace Miller. And Matt, let's start basically with some of the cases you've been doing. What would you consider a predatory loan? What is it?
Well, a predatory loan is a loan made at an exceptionally high interest rate. And these loans are designed to be difficult to pay off. And they're often made at interest rates at 500, 600, even 700%. So,
whoa.
Yeah, I mean, that's really high. And
So if I go to a bank and I want a personal loan, I know the interest rates are higher now, I could probably get one for 10% or something along those lines. You're saying 500%?
That's right.
So obviously someone that's in that scenario, they're either less educated on how the financial system works and what their options are, or they truly cannot get a loan elsewhere. And probably more people fall on the latter, right?
Yeah. But, you know, again, these loans are they're designed to trap people in a cycle of debt. So sometimes people take out another loan just to pay off the finance charge of their first loan. But the state of Illinois has said, we don't permit this. We don't allow it. In Illinois, if you're an unlicensed lender, you can't make a loan at an interest rate over 9%. And if you're licensed, not over 36. So these are vastly in excess of what's permitted under Illinois law.
Wait, unlicensed, not over 9%. As a way to, I imagine, encourage more and more lenders to get licensed in the state.
Exactly.
9% is not all that high. So, okay, so now you're licensed. Now you can go up to 36%, which is still high, but APRs on credit cards are 24.5%. So you're at least more in a ballpark of where lending is. Okay, so 36% is the threshold. Well, then how does this happen? I mean, really, are these people advertising these loans, or is this so done in secret and off the books that it just never sees the light of day to the people that need to see it?
Well, yeah, they spend a huge amount. Well, great question, John. They spend a huge amount on advertising, on lead generation, on being able to originate these loans. And one of the defendants in my case against a predatory lender called Zocca Loans is actually a private equity firm in Miami, Florida. They're a Delaware limited liability company, and they fund all these loans. They originate them, they service them, they market them, and they have affiliates that collect on them. So, you know, they're taking on a big risk doing this, but it's extremely profitable.
So they do advertise to try and get these leads, but they're obviously not advertising, get your 500,000 or 500% loan here. They just are advertising, hey, you need money quick, we're going to be your answer for you. Here's this number. Here's this generic number. They're a private equity firm based out of Florida, but there's probably local offices or little satellite offices around, or is it all done over the phone?
It's all done over the internet. They'll help service the loans, help, you know, over the phone, but they're over the internet.
There's
no physical locations in Illinois. In fact, there's no location anywhere other than Miami.
Is that how they get away with this? That they, since they don't have an office here in Illinois, they don't follow under the same rules and regulation? Or in Illinois, if you do business here, regardless of where your office is, you have to abide by the rules of Illinois?
So it's more the latter. I mean, if you come into Illinois and you make a loan to an Illinois resident, it cannot be in excess of that 9% if you're unlicensed, period. Now, how do they get away with it? Through some complex legal maneuvering. The loan agreements say that no federal or state law applies to the loans. And also there's an arbitration provision in these loans, which is a separate contract. And the effect of that is that, let's just, you know, my client has a claim against them because the loans are illegal. But the arbitration provision says, hey, if you want to proceed against us, you have to do it individually in a confidential arbitration that's not going to be public, and you can't proceed on a class basis. So that's one of the ways they maneuver here.
So they say in the fine print, hey, we're not following state or federal laws. You're not protected by that. You can come after us, but we're going to make it as hard as possible for you to do it. You've signed on the dotted line, and you're up a creek.
Right. That's right. But there's a problem. You can't enforce an arbitration provision that it's called disclaiming federal law. And you can't enforce one that disclaims state law either. So we argued when they raised the issue, they said they want to get the case out of federal court and they wanted to put it in arbitration. And we said, no, hey, you can't do that. And actually, the district judge agreed with us. This case was pending in federal district court here in Chicago. And he said, no, you can't do it. And then they appealed that decision. But in any case, we don't think they'll be able to get away with it.
Right. And I know you just argued in front of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which I want to go into how cool that is in a little bit, because that's a big deal. So their argument was, okay, we want to force you still into arbitration. We don't think you can force us to follow the federal statute, or we don't think federal court is the jurisdiction for where this should be adjudicated.
Right. But again, there were a number of problems there. First of all, they waited too long to raise the issue. We filed this case, and then they waited 14 months before they ever said, hey, stop, you have to proceed in arbitration, because that's what, you know, they say, my client said.
Mm-hmm.
So they forfeited their right to do it. The district judge agreed. Also, they can't enforce the contract because they're not parties to it. You know, if I have a contract with you and you have a dispute with me, you can proceed against me. But here they weren't parties to the contract. And under Illinois law, they couldn't proceed in enforcing the contract as a third party.
I guess I should ask a civil question. This is a civil lawsuit, right?
That's right.
This is not your, I mean, it's pertaining to your client individually. We're not talking about them being taken to court, being prosecuted for being illegal, are they?
No, I mean, I wish we could do that.
Right.
These are really bad people. But I will say in Illinois, there's a criminal usury statute. So if you make a loan to an Illinois consumer at an interest rate over 20%, that's a felony. So you can be prosecuted for that.
Okay, so then wait, why is the Illinois Attorney General not the one going after this law firm
well? Well, it's a private equity firm, but yeah, that's a good question.
Okay. I'm not putting you on the spot there.
Yeah, one that I don't have a good answer for you.
Well, right. You're dealing with your client and you're doing what you can. I guess I'll make my own aside and just say, if this is happening in law firms, I hope that the proper authorities are listening and can do this. Because your client, I mean, I imagine, is not the only person that's fallen prey to this.
Exactly. And that's part of the problem. So over a four-year period from 2018 to 2022, Zocca Loans made 10,000 similar loans to Illinois residents.
10,000 loans to Illinois residents?
10,000. So most of these are between $500 and $700, but the interest rates are so high that the finance charge, the amount that one pays in interest, could be like $2,000, $2,500. So it's a lot of money. Now, nationwide, during the same period, they made about 250,000 loans. So we're talking about a lot of money and a lot of people that were injured.
You mentioned the thresholds in Illinois of 9% for unlicensed, 36% for licensed. Are there federal rules for that too, or no?
There aren't, no.
Okay. So the other loans in other states, if those states don't have those rules and regulations, could be entirely valid.
They could be, yeah. There are some states that don't have caps on the rate of interest that can be offered on a consumer loan, like Delaware, Missouri, Utah, there are others. Most states do, though, and increasingly we're seeing that. And, of course, there should be caps.
Right.
You know, states want to protect their citizens.
So you are suing on behalf of your client. Are you asking just for the amount paid on the loan to be forgiven? Is there punitive damages on top of this? What are you guys asking for?
Yeah, we're asking for a whole lot of stuff because, you know, our client's entitled to it. So in 2021, the state of Illinois passed the Predatory Loan Prevention Act, and that statute says that if you make a loan at an interest rate over 36%, that the consumer can recover not just the interest they paid and not just the interest over whatever the cap is. They can recover all the interest that they paid. They can recover all the principal they paid, so all the monies, and then they can seek declaratory and injunctive relief. So a violation of the PLPA is also a violation of the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act.
Okay. All right. So obviously we don't know what the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has said on this yet, and we're awaiting the ruling. I hope you call in when we get that ruling and update us on what's happening. I also want to ask you, we got to take a break for news here in a second, Matt, but I want to ask you a little bit more about arguing. Was this your first time in front of a federal court of appeals?
It was, yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you about what that experience was. And by the way, the 630 said, even the mob doesn't charge 500%. For interest rates. Yeah, very good point there. Association Matt Goldstein from Wallace Miller, who just recently argued in front of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals on behalf of his client, who they say has had to pay off, what, he took out four predatory loans, Matt, ultimately?
Yeah, I'd put it differently. I'd say four loans were made to him, but yeah.
Four loans were made to him that were, as you say, in violation of Illinois law.
Yep.
And he was owing, what, 500, 600% on these loans?
That's right.
Getting one after the other to pay them off.
Right.
And in fact, had paid some of them off, right?
Yeah, the first three he paid in full, and that's what most people do. And, you know, most
which
people,
is amazing.
Go ahead. You know, most people get these loans because they have some terrible event, maybe a catastrophic event in their life. They need monies for a funeral or for, you know, a medical expense that was unexpected. So, you know, people don't – this isn't in people's plan.
Right.
And that's why when something bad happens, the state has said – We're not going to permit people to make these types of loans to our citizens.
Yeah, and just the Illinois law for licensed folks that can give loans is 36%. That's the cap.
Right.
And these were more than 10 times higher than that.
Yep.
Which just seems insane. But they hide behind a lot of language and legalese, I imagine. You feel desperate. You maybe don't read every word in the fine print, and even if you do, you still feel that sense of desperation and need to do it. I'm sure there's a selling tactic behind this as well. You've traced this all back to a private equity firm out of Florida, which doesn't even have brick-and-mortar locations in our area. This is all done over the internet, right?
Right. Well, the private equity firm has – they're in Miami. They have fancy offices, so they have a physical location.
Right, but not here.
No, not here. No.
Not here. Okay, I'm just making sure I got all this. So you guys won in district court, right?
Well, we won in the district court. They tried to enforce this arbitration provision, and the district judge said, no, you can't do it. You forfeited your right to do it, and in any case, even if you hadn't, you're not a party to the contract. You can't enforce it.
Okay.
So then they appeal that decision, and it's their right to do it. It's called an interlocutory appeal. They have 30 days to appeal. They did it within a few days, and then we argued the case before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals.
What was that like?
It was an amazing experience. I will tell you, John, I didn't sleep much the night before. I'm happy it's done, but I think we did well.
Were you nervous?
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, here you are, this kid who set up mock trial at Highland Park High School, and here you are. Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
Early 30s.
Early 30s.
I'll tell you that.
So you're less than, well, I'm late 30s, I'll tell you that too. So here you are, less than 20 years out of high school from when you started your team's mock trial, and here you are at the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Did you feel like when you got in the groove, though, you knew what you were doing, it was fine?
I would say, yeah, and that was in part because of my experience doing mock trial. I also did some of it in college. You know, I was ready for it, and then I have great support in my law firm. Mark Miller, one of my bosses, and obviously one of the named partners, he was there with me. Ed Wallace has been so supportive. My colleagues, you know, my assistant, it's been great.
Because I've listened to a lot of oral arguments that the Supreme Court does, where they interview and pepper you with questions in the middle of your arguments. Is that how it works at the Seventh Circuit too?
Yeah, and I would say that's what, that's maybe how an argument in a federal court of appeals is different from an argument in a district court. They can interrupt you at any time and ask you whatever question they want. And they do, and they usually do it often. I had a pretty hot bench, which means we had a lot of questions, and I think that's a good sign. Sometimes it's more difficult if you're just kind of giving a speech and then you don't really have a sense of what they're thinking and what you need to say. But when they're asking you questions, you know, it's someone described it as hand-holding. You know, you need to you know, do your best to allay whatever concerns they have.
Right. And you can maybe form and maybe fill the gap in an argument that they're not seeing eye to eye with you in, and you can kind of walk them through that, and you get that instant feedback as well, which is interesting. Okay, so they're peppering you with questions. You don't have to give me any specifics, but there were there. And also, I just want to point this out too. You tell me if I'm wrong, that they're not only asking you questions about your specific client, right? They're asking you about broader rules and regulations in the state and, I don't know, about federal rules and regulations too, about how it all works, like the process too, right?
Exactly.
So you've got to know the case law leading up to this in other cases in similar situations.
Yeah, you have to know the facts of your individual case in and out, and then you have to know the law generally. And in my case, there were three or four big complex legal issues, but, you know, it was a privilege to do it. And, you know, fingers crossed we'll get a good result. But, you know, one way or another, we're going to proceed with this, getting justice for our client and holding these people accountable.
Now that you've done the Seventh Circuit, you ready for the Supreme Court?
Yeah. Not yet.
Not yet? Get a couple more of those under your belt before you do that?
Yeah.
This client of yours who was paying these predatory loans, how did he find you? Like, I mean, how – because – if he didn't come to you and call you essentially and say, here's what's happening, this company would have never faced any sort of repercussions. This would have continued until, I mean, that's just a strange way to think about how things actually work in the real world. But someone has to call a lawyer eventually and say, this is happening to me, before a case to go rolling down the hill.
Yep. And that's why, you know, I think it's a good rule of thumb. If you don't know, ask. And someone had suggested to my client that he reach out to a lawyer. And it's good that he did, because we looked at the documents and we said, no, this loan is illegal and you have a claim. And so do thousands of other people. So let's do something about it. But you don't know unless you call. Not everyone has a claim. And some people have a claim, but it may not make sense to proceed individually or on a class basis. But, you know, you don't know unless you ask. So, you know, we're here to help people.
We've had a couple texts from people feeling like they've been put in predatorial situations, whether it's loans. Someone has a healthcare example where they were rushed into a financing plan for an operation they eventually didn't do. A day later, they decided not to do it, and the company that provided their financing said, nope, you're already committed. You're going to owe us this money. That doesn't seem right. I don't know if that's illegal. But when people have these questions, should they be calling Wallace Miller? I mean, are you guys now like, hey, our eyes are open as well, and we want to pursue more cases like this?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're proceeding with this case against Oka Loans, and then we have our eye on and are investigating several other predatory lending operations. So yeah, if someone has a loan like this, you know, give us a call.
312-261-6193 is the phone number. 312-261-6193. WallaceMiller.com. That's your homework, listeners. WallaceMiller.com, or give them the number 312-261-6193. And I give that number, and we've been talking about predatory loans. If you go to WGNRadio.com, you can hear great examples of other things they do at Wallace Miller. We mentioned the baby formula case that Tim, right, was doing, and Tim's working on with cases maybe linked in many ways to I almost said Alzheimer's. That's not what I'm trying to say.
Autism.
Autism spectrum issues. So many other cases they've worked on. 312-261-6193. All right, Matt. Nice work. Come back on after you find out what the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals does, okay?
I count on it.
Was my grilling worse or better than what the Seventh Circuit did?
It was better.
Okay. Yeah.